Hello, Cincinnati! Welcome to this episode of our podcast. This one was filmed in Chicago at Industry Ale's Brew Pub with our good friend Matt, who is one of the co-founders. We talk about the pub. We talk about some background information and history on our dear friend Kevin Berman. How about that, Red Legs fans? What do you say we get this thing started? Position. I just sold out to the perfect condition. Coming alive. Whoa. We are here in Chicago at Industry Ale's Brew Pub with our good friend here, Matt Wiegers, who is one of the co-founders of this place. And let me tell you something, it is beautiful. Our good friend, Kevin Berman, put us in touch with you.
And you do admit to having him as a friend?
Yeah.
Some days, yeah.
Okay. So where did your misfortune in life come in, meeting Kevin Berman?
High school. So he was good friends with our buddy Brad Pertell, and they played soccer against each other and then volleyball against each other. And I, by happen chance, went to a high school party at Brad's house, showed up with a case of beer after a volleyball tournament, and the rest is history.
Okay. Is it true that he was known as White Chocolate?
That's new to me.
All right. But we got it.
So that's a news flash for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's, yeah.
That confirms my suspicions.
Busted, Kevin.
Yeah, I've never heard that before. So it was.
Do you have any good stories to share about him?
Ooh,
he's usually good for one or two.
One or two hundred.
You know, Kevin being Kevin is one to be an instigator, and we were up at a Cubs game, and had one too many pops that day, and he said the wrong thing to the wrong person, and out of the corner of my eye, I caught this guy just about to cold cock him. Right in the middle of Clark Street, and being the large man that I am, I met that guy's face with my fist before his fist, you know, met Kevin. And to this day, Kevin's like, "I'll owe you forever for that," because this guy was gonna knock him out.
He probably could have used a little bit of that.
Yes.
Yeah. But no, Kevin's great, man. He's, you know, charismatic. Got his shit together for the most part, and you know,
yeah, for the most part, that's a good way to put it.
Great guy.
That's great to know. So, introduced us to you as I believe you opened recently here in the Loop within Chicago. So, tell us about the concept when you were first thinking about opening an establishment. You know how that started.
Yeah, it was it's kind of a 10-year idea of just, you know, working for restaurants, making other people money, and pandemic hit, and my partners and I are not people to just kind of sit on our hands, and said, why don't we try to get this idea going, and put together a business plan, found an investor, and we're off to the races.
So how long did that process take for you? From concept to opening the door?
Almost 3 years. So basically right at the beginning of the pandemic, and about halfway through, we started building it out, and it took us about 2 years to do the full build out. So it's a very large space. If you ever come down here, it's about 14,000 square feet of space on three different levels. And there was nothing here before. So we added 9 bathrooms, a brewery, 3 bars, and it's been quite the journey.
And you'll have a speakeasy?
Yeah, so starting next month, turning our speakeasy into a music venue, doing Thursday through Sunday, live music. Fridays and Saturdays, we'll probably have 2 different shows a night, and then looking to do a Sunday jazz brunch as well.
So you're going to have a special brunch menu? Are you going to stick to kind of what you have for a lunch menu now?
No, we'll have a separate brunch menu. Thinking about doing some bottomless mimosas and things like that as well to kind of draw the crowd in.
The whipped brisket, eggs benedict.
Ooh, okay.
I don't know why, it just sounds really good. It
does sound great. We do have a brisket bacon as well.
Oh, that might be better.
So we could do that. A brisket bacon benedict. It just rolls off the tongue nicely.
Yeah. Find some like green onions or something to put on top of it. I mean, I'll leave that to your...
Yeah, to do some, you know, TL, but some chives.
To me, that sounds like really good.
Especially if a hard night out, that sounds great.
Oh, yeah. Get your carbs, get your protein.
Yeah.
some grease. Oof. Grease always helps with a hangover. I don't know why.
Every time.
I was going to say, get rid of your hangover.
So do you have any plans outside of Industry Ales?
So outside of Industry Ales, well, that's pretty much my life for the last 3 years. I like to travel, like to play golf. So, you know, now that we're open, I'd like to get out and play some more golf.
What about business-wise? Do you have any expansion plans for different spinoff businesses under the, we'll call it an umbrella?
I would say, you know, there's plans for it, but it's probably more of a 4 or 5 year plan to open up a second location somewhere else. Definitely want to get into the distribution game for, you know, getting our beer into every liquor store, every bar in the city.
And what's the challenges to do that? Because I think you'd agree there's a lot of competitors out there, if you want to call, you know, the other breweries that. And
it's just capacity at this point. And being new, it's you know, it's our goal to just keep getting our name out there and, you know, getting our beer into, you know, the hands of different, you know, neighborhoods, different people. And then, you know, in order to kind of be a player in the distribution game, you got to have a lot of space and a lot of brewing capacity. And for us here, it's a pretty small operation. So once we kind of get that traction in the market, then we can reach out and start working with some other bigger breweries to get our product into cans and bottles.
Well, the other thing too is like with any business, you don't want to grow too fast and then the product sack or, you know, the product suffer. So what would the, we'll call it, as far as distribution is concerned, what would you consider the mountaintop? Like having it in like fine wine, spirits, or ABC, what?
Yeah, I would say local market. You know, if you get into Binnie's, you're probably doing okay. You know, our kind of concept is to kind of start small and branch out to some of the neighborhoods just outside of the Loop and then keep building from there.
It sounds like, in speaking with you, you're in the Loop. Business is pretty good Monday through Friday. So I assume that means your customers enjoy the offerings on your menu as well, as far as the food goes.
Absolutely. The food's been a big hit. Been booking a ton of happy hours for all the local, you know, businesses around the area. A lot of banks, a lot of, you know, technology companies. And we're right in the heart of the convention season. United States' largest convention center is about a half a mile away. So getting some of the traffic from all these big conventions that are in town. So it's been great.
So what are some of the highlights on your food menu?
Ooh, the burgers I can't miss. We have two different styles of burgers. The smash burger that you guys tried today is only on our lunch menu, but we're trying to get our arm twisted to put that on the dinner menu because people love it so much. But our dinner menu burger is more of a big fat patty. Really, really great blend. We're calling it the Beast Blend. So it's bison, elk, and Kobe beef, and it's something special.
So where do you get the elk?
So
the
the
bison is more common you'll see in restaurants, yeah. But elk isn't one that's very common.
So it's a proprietary blend that we get from one of our distribution partners, and it's only in like one or two restaurants in the city.
The only reason I'm asking is because we're obviously into hunting, and it was like 5 years ago, we were talking about what if we, because like over in England, they sell venison, but right. Their venison's a red stag. Here, venison is white-tailed deer
right.
Or mule deer. We were talking about, oh, we have a farm, maybe we can grow some deer and sell them to some restaurants as meat, but do you know like where they procure their elk meat from? Are they farm-raised, I would assume?
I'm pretty sure they are.
Because they'd have to follow all the legal
FDA
practices, yeah, the FDA guidelines and everything.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's farm-raised. I'm not sure exactly where it's from, but I should find out because that's a good question.
Be
yeah.
Interesting to know.
Yeah.
Well, and as a marketing tactic with, I don't know about the bison, but I would assume it's going to be the same as the elk. You know, they're going to have their shots, but they're not pumped as full of stuff as
right.
Beef cattle is.
Right.
So it's more of a lean, healthy meat.
Yeah, so we actually get our beef from a small farm up in Gratiot, Wisconsin. So one of our partners, his family owns a dairy farm up there, and the cows that we get are top-notch. Before you guys leave, we'll have to have you try one of our steaks on our menu, too, because the quality of the beef's fantastic.
Do you guys get to hand-pick the cows?
We do.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
They send us pictures of the heifers, and we're like, yep, that's the one we want.
Nice, nice. Is there any certain qualities you're looking for?
A lot of marbling. Love them, you know, marbling, and, you know, it's all grass-fed beef, so it's high quality, really nice stuff.
So they've got different methods for growing beef, like grass-fed. Is it totally grass-fed, or do they do like a month before they go to the processor where they kind of grain feed them a little bit more to kind of beef them up a bit?
They fatten them up a little bit with some grain towards the end, yeah. And that adds a little bit of flavor to the meat as well.
Yeah, because it actually, people don't know, like grass-fed versus grain-fed, it is two different flavor profiles. And when you grass-feed them and then you grain-feed them for that last month, you kind of get a mix of both of the flavors, and it helps add to the fat content, which also helps add to the moisture of the meat and then the tenderness.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without getting too crazy, obviously. So
most of the farmers up there are finishing off with a little bit of that.
Yeah. Now, as far as your beers are concerned, you're brewing, where do you guys procure most of your supplies for that? Is that the locally sourced thing as well?
Most of it is, yeah. So we're using some really small companies that we get our malt from. There's a company out of Colorado. I think we were the first brewery in Chicago to use their malt. Our head brewer, Michael Goretz, is big into malt and the flavors of malt. We use a local yeast wrangler in town that we get all of our yeast from. And he actually worked there for about 3 years as a yeast wrangler. So he can tell you what kind of yeast is in your favorite beer. And he's probably one of the only people in the country that knows what some of these companies are using for their yeast.
Yeah. So you're, I guess most of what you guys offer here, whether it be beer or food, is either locally sourced or handpicked from, well, for lack of a better term, call it a specialized farmer or.
For the most, you know, for all of the main proteins and vegetables we're using, you know, kind of locally sourced smaller farms. You just want the best quality you can get.
Do you know much about the process of brewing beer?
I know some.
I don't know much. Can you give me like a 30,000 foot view? Like, it doesn't have to be long-winded, but like a 30,000 foot view of brewing a beer?
You know, it takes some time. You take basically your grain and your hops and your yeast, and you're basically cooking it for 6 to 7 hours, and that basically takes that sugar from all the grain and it turns that into alcohol. Then you add the yeast, is where most of your flavor comes from in beer, is from the yeast. And then once that process is finished, he transfers it over to the fermenters, and then it can sit in the fermenters anywhere from 3 weeks to 6 weeks, depending on the style and the gravity or the alcohol content of the desired beer. And once that's kind of done interacting with the yeast, he then transfers that over to the bright tanks. And then from there, it gets fermented, gets carbonated with CO2, which gives, you know, the beer its bubbles and its kind of character.
Do you have any plans on aging any of it in bourbon barrels?
Absolutely. So we have a local liquor store down the street called Warehouse Liquors. It's my little honey hole for bourbon.
You'll have to share that with me after the podcast.
Absolutely. You'll have to stop. It's one of the best bourbon selections in probably Illinois. They do 15 or 20 barrel picks every year. So we're going to get two or three of their barrel pick barrels, and we're going to do some cool stuff with it.
How many beers do you plan on having, we'll say, call it the three-year plan? Right now you're at what, six, you said?
Right now we're at six. You know, the goal is to have at least 12 to 15 on tap at all times. But, you know, we've been selling it faster than we can make it right now, so it's staying between six and eight at a time right now.
Okay, so you mentioned your brewmaster. How did you guys come up with the food menu? Was there a certain individual that was in charge of that? Was it a collaborative amongst several of you guys?
So it was, we actually got a chef. He worked for Revolution Brewing, where he won Bar Food of the Year for the last, like, 6 years. His name is Steve Kowalski. Really talented chef, and just wanted a little more freedom on creating the menu, so kind of gave him a few items that we had to have on the menu, and then we gave him a blank canvas and said, hey, work with a brewer, you know, make stuff that, you know, goes well with his beers, and then vice versa.
So what other kind of exciting offerings do you have on the menu in addition to the smash burger and the evening burger?
So we have a really, really great meat and cheese platter. We have mussels, Prince Edward Island mussels that we use our wit beer on that are sensational.
Wait, how did you say you do that?
We use the wit beer to cook the mussels in.
Oh, nice.
So it kind of takes on the flavor of that wit beer with, you know, onions and scallions and garlic. It's fantastic.
You can't go wrong with PEIs.
Oh, no.
Nope.
Oh, they're so good.
those get brought in every other day fresh, and they're delicious.
Anything else that's among the favorite of your customers?
Yeah, how about that?
So we have a whipped brisket spread. So
whipped brisket.
So we basically we smoke brisket and then we whip it into almost a kind of a pate kind of consistency, and that's served with some house-made chips, and it's been a big hit.
Was that your idea, right?
Yeah. I can cook, but I'm more of the griller myself. So the fine dining aspects, I know about it and I enjoy eating it, but I don't have the time or the patience.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting because there's a lot of people I think don't appreciate the amount of time and effort that goes into having a place like this, from you to the wait staff, everything, and they'll leave small tips, they'll complain about stuff very quickly, and people forget, like, this is not an easy type of business to start, run, operate, and succeed.
You're 100% correct with that.
I love cooking, and my daughter's always like, Daddy, why don't you open a restaurant? And I'm like, I don't know if I would love cooking as much anymore if I did that.
Correct. Yeah, it's a tough business because the margins are very tight. But, you know, if you have a passion for it, and, you know, it's what I've known for the last 15 to 20 years, it's not that difficult. Just the amount of hours that go into putting it together is the real challenge.
And you just took your first vacation in how many years?
Probably 2.5 years. Yeah, it was necessary. My wife needed it more than I did, I think.
Why, is she tired of hearing you come home from work complaining about stuff?
Yeah. No, she works for the Blackhawks, so it's they just ended their season not too long ago. So, you know, it was definitely a mutually beneficial, you know, relaxation vacation.
And her being with the Blackhawks, I saw where they will be playing on New Year's Eve at Wrigley.
Yeah, they're playing the Winter Classic. So the first Winter Classic they ever did was at Wrigley. And I think it was maybe 2 degrees outside. She didn't work for them at that point, and I'm a diehard Blackhawks fan, and we were sitting at the bar across the street at Sports Corner, and going to try to scalp tickets, and they were like $500-$600 a piece, and we're like, nah, we'll watch the game from the bar. And the guys came in and sat next to us. They've dressed, you know, to go to the Tundra, and I was like, hey, did you guys go to the game? They're like, yeah, we left. Do you want our tickets? And we're like, sure. So we ended up getting free tickets, and it was a blast.
That's a lucky find.
It was great. Yeah.
Good to be you that day.
They got our bar seats because there's no seat available in the bar, and then we got to go.
So you traded bar seats for
tickets. Yeah. And they were great tickets. It was awesome. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. All right. So in a business like this, what's like your least favorite part, and what's like the biggest reward for you, or the thing you enjoy most about it? Because I'm sure they're highly separated and totally polar opposites, if I had to guess. Again, because the restaurant and brewery industry is not easy.
I would say the hardest part is, as a new business, is finding your pars. So, you know, having the correct amount of staff on so that, you know, service is great and everybody's enjoying their service and their time. You want to think that right when you open the doors, you're going to be busy from day one. So you staff, you know, that you're going to be do 250 covers in a night. But the reality is you probably do half that, if not less. So, you know, really trying to dial in those numbers and finding a comfortable ratio of staff to, you know, customers. That's been the most difficult part. But just the best part is just seeing people walk out of here and, you know, big smile on their face. People leave nice reviews and just saying that, you know, what we've tried to put together is coming across to the people that we try to get it across to. So,
yeah. I think you're at a good time for it as well.
Yeah. It's the Chicago downtown took a big hit from the pandemic, and you know, the growth has been small, but it's coming back a lot faster than it was right when, you know, people started coming back to the offices.
So you're talking about the wait staff. I have a friend that's opened a place where I live in Melbourne, Florida, and he built from scratch because it's a standalone building. It's not a big city, obviously. They were behind on the build, so he had X amount of staff and employees that he had to cover their salaries for a month or two until they opened. Did you kind of have any problems with that, or were you guys pretty much more aligned? I guess because you would have had a lead time with the pandemic to take care of what you need to get this place going inside as far as construction is concerned, or remodeling, we'll call it.
Little issue. You know, we brought on our brewer about a year ago, and his first beer that he brewed was just under 5 months ago. So he had some time to kind of build his program out and, you know, kind of get his ducks in a row. Other than that, you know, the hiring process was actually not easy for us, but I think we had 140 applicants in the first 24 hours of posting our job for kitchen and wait staff.
All right. Missouri, you're a Cardinals fan?
I am a Cardinals fan.
Okay, so we're sitting in Chicago, obviously where the Cubs are from. We're Reds fans, and you're a Cardinals fan. Is there a Brewers fan here? Anybody? We're missing one team for the NL Central.
Well, Tom was supposed to be here. He's a Brewers fan.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, so our Brewers fan bailed on us. You know what? That's it. It's a sign.
Yeah.
Brewers aren't winning the division this year. You messed it up, Tom.
Cardinals will come back and you know, be the Cardinals again this year, I think.
They haven't been the Cardinals in a couple years.
I know. It's an injury bug has hit St. Louis the last 3 years.
We got it this year.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite sport to watch? How about this? What's your favorite sport to watch, and what's your favorite sport to play?
Favorite sport to watch? Probably golf.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a big... Answer's the same for both. I love playing golf. And watching it for me is just relaxing. I grew up caddying, and I was a course up north of here called the Merritt Club. It's about 150 members, super, super private. So I, growing up, caddied for Jordan about 50 times. I taught Brian Urlacher how to swing a golf club.
He could actually swing it? His arms weren't too stiff and big?
Back then, first time I caddied for him, it was his first time ever swinging a golf club. So, you know, for about a month, I would go out there with my clubs and kind of just show him around and how to swing a golf club. And
now, that's pretty cool.
And now he's like a scratch golfer. That's all he does is play golf.
Oh, because
really?
Of you.
Yeah.
Wow. You're planted the seed.
Yeah, we were at dinner at Ditka's probably 4 or 5 years ago, and Urlacher was doing a demo or an appearance upstairs at some banquet, and he was walking out, and he sees me, and he's like, "Hey, Matt, what the hell are you doing here?" My wife's like, "No fucking way. No way." So we sat there and just chatted for about 10, 15 minutes. And
she thought you were Berman in that instance.
Yes.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. You beat me to it.
Same thing with Jordan. I've seen him out a couple of times, and he used to call me big man because I was, you know, 6'5" as a 16-year-old, and he was 6'6". So, you know, "What's up, big man? How you doing?"
Did he bet a lot when he was golfing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was actually, if you watch the 30 for 30, or not, what is it, The Last Dance?
The Last Dance, yeah.
I was caddying for him that day that he drank 24 Coors Lights and then went out and scored 52 points.
I mean, that's good, crazy. But is it John Daly good? Because John Daly can, like, drink that much and go play golf like he does every day.
That man, I've seen him drink a bottle of tequila and go out and play. Like, it's, he's a different breed of person, man.
Yeah, that's just not normal.
No. Like, if I had a bottle of tequila, I'd be on the floor. That guy's going to go out and score 50 points in a playoff game.
All right.
We good?
Yes, sir.
Awesome, man.
Thanks, buddy.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this week's episode. We had a great time with Matt in Chicago. Coming up next week, we have the Red Zone, Tyler Stevenson coming on. We're going to talk a little bit about catching, and we're going to get into some more fun stuff. So, until then, whatever, whatever. See y'all next week.